Alaska's growing season is getting longer. The season has lengthened in some parts of the state from 90 to now 120 days. What does a longer crop season mean for Alaska's agricultural potential, and how much more food could be grown right here, and what kind of support is needed? As spring approaches, we're talking with growers and food policy advocates about the possibilities for new crops in the north today on Talk of Alaska.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Alaskans know that much of our food comes from a distance and adds expense to all that we import. Supply line disruptions during the pandemic were an anxious reminder of how vulnerable our food supplies are and how quickly store shelves can become empty. The best thing for healthy eating is to grow what you can, if you can, and support local growers who provide crops to sell. Small acreage growers, hoop houses, hydroponics, and again, longer growing seasons are all conducive to more food production. So, is it moving the needle on how much of our food supply is being grown locally? Here to help us understand where we are currently and what the future may bring is Robbie Mixon. Robbie is the Executive Director of the Alaska Food Policy Council. Also on the line today is Rachel Lord. Rachel is the Advocacy and Policy Director for the Alaska Food Policy Council. And also Amy Seitz is on the line with us. Amy is the Policy Director for the Alaska Farm Bureau. Welcome, all of you. Thanks for being available today.
Yeah, thanks for having us today.
All right, we are going to get started here. I've got tons of questions. So to start us off here, for all of you, how much food is being grown in Alaska today compared to like a decade ago? And what do you think the future holds in that respect? Who wants to take that?
I guess I'll take that, Amy, with the Farm Bureau.
All right, Amy, thank you.
Which I know, I mean, it's hard to know exactly, but I mean, we could look at the USDA Census of Agriculture, and they do a census every 5 years, and we are seeing increased number of farms, increased production. I think the last one was 2022, and it showed an increase of, I say, 18% of the number of farms and like 29% increase in production, you know, the value of products sold. So, I mean, we are seeing an increase. It is hard to pinpoint exactly because I know not everybody fills out the census of agriculture, but it's still, you know, we say 5% of food purchased is grown in Alaska. That seems to be the number everyone uses, but we also don't have the data to really show that that's true. But it is somewhere around that. But we are seeing an increase, just small increments, and obviously not enough yet.
And when you say an 18%, oh, sorry, Robbie, go ahead, jump in there.
Oh, no, I just wanted to chime in. This is Robbie with the Food Policy Council. We've also seen a huge increase in the number of farmers markets, food hubs, and farm stands. In 2005, we had 13 markets registered with the Division of Ag. And today, through the Alaska Farmers Market Association's work, we've been able to identify over 85 markets in the state. So those small specialty crop farms are supplying at least 86 communities with local food grown here in the state. So there's been a big increase in that area too.
And I would, if I could just chime in,
Rachel.
This is Rachel with the Food Policy Council. You know, when you talk about the need for data or the lack of data, you know, I just want to also chime in that that's something that's been identified, you know, by Alaska Food Policy Council, by Farm Bureau, by the governor, by the legislature. And we do have a project right now through AFPC and in coordination with the Division of Ag to really develop a food systems database and to to try to get a better handle on these sort of baseline data questions and to be able to track them over time regarding the food systems around the state.
That sounds fantastic and needed. Backing up just a bit, Amy, when you say that there is an 18% increase in the census that was taken in 2022, that seems significant, 18%. But what's the criteria for who counts as a farm? Is it a certain number of acreage, or how do they factor in who counts in that growth?
Yeah, so for USDA, the Ag Census, you have to have $1,000 in sales for the year to count as a farm.
Oh, so the bar isn't real high then.
No, it's
Okay.
not high. And obviously, once they reach $1,000 in sales, we just hope they keep going up from there.
Of course, adding to those 86 markets around the state. Robbie, give us an overview of this year's Alaska Food Policy Council conference. It will be held later this month, I believe the March 28th and 29th. And it's going to be in Kodiak. What is the aim for this year's conference, and why did you decide to host it in Kodiak?
Well, this will be our eighth conference. We hold our conference every 18 months, so it alternates between the spring and the fall, so we can accommodate a more diverse schedule of our growers and fishers and policymakers. So this year we are taking it off the road system for the first time. To Kodiak, and we have some pretty amazing partners that we've been working with for years on various projects. So, partners like the Kodiak Archipelago Leadership Institute, who are behind the Aleutik Grown program and a food hub there. And we've just been really inspired by all the amazing work that's happening in Kodiak in terms of renewable energy and hydroponics and indigenous-led farmer cooperatives. So we had a great partner, and we decided, hey, it's time to take our event off the road system so we can reach more Alaskans. And then also, we often see folks in rural areas that have to make the effort to get to places like Anchorage or Fairbanks, say. So this time we wanted to flip the script and have folks experience traveling to a rural off-road system area.
And do you think, I know that the conference hasn't happened yet, so you can't really gauge its success yet, but are you thinking that you may decide to do more of that in the future, take the conference to rural places off the road system to help support people who are growing in remote parts of Alaska?
Yeah, we sure hope so. I think we'll go back and forth between Anchorage and then more rural or off the road system place every other conference. But one thing you mentioned earlier, the pandemic, one thing that we learned during that time, we held two of our conferences virtually, and we saw a tremendous increase in the number of folks that were able to participate just because it was virtual. So, in addition to taking it outside of the road system, we are now offering virtual attendance at all of our events so people can attend without the high time and travel costs.
And what do you hope people take away from this year's gathering?
We hope that people are challenged to see different perspectives about food systems topics. So we hope that there's lots of cross-pollination of ideas. There's partnerships and projects that come out of these conferences every year. And yeah, our theme this year is a community table, collaboration for a sustainable food future. And we're hoping that people really look towards the future to build more collaborative food systems that support more Alaskans.
And I
And
think, Lori, this is Rachel with AFPC as well. And one of the things that is so cool about working for and with the Alaska Food Policy Council and our many partners, including the Farm Bureau, is the opportunity to be working across sectors. And so doing that systems-wide work is something that, we often are focused on agricultural production or mariculture or food access, our food bank and food pantry partners. And the list goes on. And to be with AFPC and to be able to, this conference really is a cross-sectional look. So it's producers, it's food access partners, it's federal agencies and state agencies, it's people working really intensely in education and that sort of work, and policy and advocacy, food waste and culinary, tribal issues, looking at food sovereignty and tribal self-determination. So there really just is this amazing opportunity when we get out of the silos of the particular focuses that we have and look to see where those pieces intersect, is something that we see a lot of opportunity. And Alaska is, as your listeners on Talk of Alaska know, one big small town, right? We all are very, very connected. And that is true within our food systems as well, in terms of where we can find, I think, a lot of opportunity points for leveraging our resources collaboratively. So I think that's just, it's a great part of any conference when you get to get together with people who have similar interests. And the Alaska Food Festival and Conference is so broad in that, and all tied together through that food system lens, that the opportunity is just huge.
All right, thank you so much for that. If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and today we're talking about food production in Alaska and how that's changing as the climate changes. On the line with me today is Robbie Mixon. Robbie is the Executive Director of the Alaska Food Policy Council. Also, Rachel Lord is with us. Rachel is the Advocacy and Policy Director for the Alaska Food Policy Council. And Amy Seitz is on the line. Amy is a Policy Director for the Alaska Farm Bureau. Veronica writes, "Potatoes and carrots are super easy to grow, and one can store them for months. I grow my potatoes in big tubs of dirt and the carrots in a raised bed. I learned the hard way that it's easier than planting in the ground. I like to be able to grow my own food and not be completely dependent on the global food chain." I'm right there with you, Veronica. I agree. And I also agree about raised beds. I saw a dramatic example of that, a neighbor of mine who plants directly in the ground, and we compared our gardens, my raised beds, to her garden in the ground. And the plants were just thriving better in raised beds for some reason in my yard. And so raised beds are great, especially in urban areas. Amy, I wanted to talk to you a bit about the Farm Service, the Alaska Farm Bureau, and the services that it provides. Talk about how you assist farmers here.
We try to do all we can. So Alaska Farm Bureau, we are primarily an advocacy organization. So obviously a lot of work with policymakers, legislators, the administration, trying to push policy that really helps our farmers. Also part of that, especially here in Alaska, where we're a young state, our agriculture industry is young, and there hasn't been a whole lot of consistent support historically. So we do a lot of advocating to consumers, also just trying to push that we do actually grow food in Alaska, and promoting where to find that food, and then trying to help our farmers have the resources they need. And it really helps, for me with Farm Bureau, being able to work with other organizations like the Food Policy Council, or have good relationships with the University Cooperative Extension Service, so we can make those connections of, things farmers need help with to where they can get that help.
And continuing on with that, maybe Rachel, you want to jump in here too, about universities in Alaska and how they may be helping agriculture here. Is it mainly through crop research and soil science that the universities are helping out, or are there training courses aimed at farming or ranching?
And this is Amy with Farm Bureau. It's really broad, and I would say, you know, the university has been underfunded, so they haven't been able to do as much as they used to for the ag programs at the university. But there's definitely the research side, which we are seeing some exciting things happen again, getting more up to date on our small grains research. You know, there's a new livestock nutrition researcher there, soil scientist. So there is definitely that side that helps our farmers be able to grow more efficiently. But then through programs like the Cooperative Extension, there's that education piece to farmers, also to home growers. So like if you just have your personal use garden and you want to learn more about preserving your harvest, so you can, you know, you can have it through the winter. There's a great, you know, great, you know, I don't know about a course, but there's information on how to safely preserve your food.
And there used to be, I mean, I assume when I lived in Fairbanks, this is Rachel with AFPC, Cooperative Extension had an awesome canning and preserving course through Cooperative Extension that was fantastic. And I think programs like that are really valuable for translating that research into, you know, there's a lot of programs that help translate the research into, you know, information that farmers can use and then also home producers can use. Also through the university, the opportunity for programs like 4-H and FFA that really get our youth involved and our communities involved through that youth involvement. Junior Market Livestock is that program through 4-H where you get kids raising steers and pigs and sheep and goats and what have you to sell. And a lot of times we have, you know, we'll have grocers who are purchasing and reselling that 4-H meat. So it's really, when we look at the university as a, it's not just research, although that is a huge component. And there is, you know, we're really excited at AFPC that the governor did include in his budget, proposed budget to the legislature, capital dollars for the ag research at UAF. We're hopeful that moves through the legislature. And when we have these types of programs that go from, you know, the state, you know, having nutritionists at the university, this ability to be able to make these connections to see where can we do things like use waste products from our seafood industry and how can we keep those waste products in state and benefiting our livestock industry, because we know that our feed costs are really high and supply chains are really vulnerable. And again, that's that cross-sector component where there, when we can have more people looking and networking and talking together about opportunities, we can shorten those supply chains and we can really increase the resilience within our own state so that our agricultural producers can thrive, our kids can thrive and see a future for themselves within an agricultural industry here in Alaska, and our, you know, our families, our working families and Alaskans across the state can also see themselves reflected in ways that they can participate in not just purchasing local food, but also growing their own food and increasing that sustainability on a home level. And really, it is an all of the above sort of space.
And for folks who haven't engaged in gardening, it is so much fun. It is so therapeutic. Both preparing the soil, it's good. There's exercise involved. There's fresh air. There is the Zen nature of being able to go out and check on your crops, and it's so fun to harvest your own food. It's just such a great time, and it's good for you. All of it is so good for all of us. Do you all think, Rachel, you were talking about the governor's support of some legislation. Do you think Alaska, the governor would like to see an agricultural department rather than a division? What do the three of you think about that? Do you think that's needed here?
Lori, Amy with the Farm Bureau. Yes. That is something that Farm Bureau has been pushing for decades. In my opinion, in Farm Bureau's opinion, there should have always been a Department of Ag. You know, there was one in the territorial days, and then we became a state, and ag was wrapped in with DNR with all the other resources, and ag really took a back seat to other resources, oil and gas, fishing, forestry, you know. So the support system for agriculture just hasn't been there to really develop the industry since we became a state. And so this, and it's exciting. There's an executive order. There's also two bills now introduced to create a Department of Ag. So it, you know, however we get there, I think it's really important to see significant growth in the agriculture industry. And you know, I know we can do a lot more. Our farmers are showing that it is viable. We can farm here, we can be successful. And so if we had that department where there was, you know, a more of a focus at the state level on what agriculture needs, I think we will really see, you know, significant growth.
And Robbie and Rachel, your thoughts here.
Yeah, Lori, thanks. This is Rachel. The Alaska Food Policy Council also is in support of a Department of Agriculture. I think, you know, everything that Amy just said in terms of having that structural framework for focused support on agriculture is vitally important for the industry to grow. And I think we've seen over the last number of years when there are investments made in ag at the state level as a facilitator and that public entity that's helping to make connections with markets and look to see where the supports might be lacking and connect those dots. When there's been focus lens put on that space and investments made, we really have seen those re the returns on those investments. You know, Amy talks about the growth in the ag census, and we can see it in our communities in terms of the growth in farmers markets and local foods available at our grocery stores. Again, you know, speaking on the road network, but this is true, I think, in a lot of places around the state. So we are also supportive of the development of a de Department of Agriculture and that framework within the governor's cabinet.
Robbie, anything you want to add, or should we move on?
I just want to add that Alaska is just one of two states that do not have a Department of Ag, us and little Rhode Island over there. So I think setting up a Department of Ag will definitely elevate agriculture to where it needs to be to actually start fulfilling more of our own food needs within the state.
I think I would, this is Rachel again, and I would maybe dovetail one more thing on that thinking on the national front. You know, and our Division of Agriculture certainly is part of conversations with other Western departments and things like that. It's not as if we're completely out of that space. But when we think about looking from Alaska at national regulations, laws, budget investments, policies, it's really vitally important that Alaska has a strong voice in those spaces. And, you know, as a nonprofit organization, Alaska Food Policy Council is certainly participating as we can, as capacity allows. But a lot of times, Alaska, the unique nature of Alaska's geography, our remoteness, and our population density, there's just a number of things that make a lot of federal policies and budget decisions not fit super well. And the more of a voice we can have at the national level to ensure the flexibility needed to really meet the needs of Alaska's agricultural industry and Alaska's food systems, I think the better off we'll be. And that is certainly something that comes part and parcel with having a commissioner of a department at a state in this nation.
Okay, let's go to the phones for a moment. Marsha is in Petersburg. Hello, Marsha.
Well, hi, and thank you for this show. I think it's very valuable. What my question is regarding is if anybody's doing commercial hydroponics growing.
All right, thanks for the question, Marsha. We'll let our experts let us know what they know about that.
Yeah, and this is Amy with Farm Bureau. We do have a growing commercial, I don't know, sector. We are seeing quite a bit more hydroponics growing, and I wish I could remember the names of all of them. I know there are some in Anchorage, Juno Greens,
Juno Greens, yeah.
Here on the Kenai Peninsula, we have a couple just in Kenai Soldotna area. So, and I know there's been efforts in the past and continuing of trying to use those hydroponic containerized gardening systems in off-road system communities just to get more fresh greens, fresh foods, not to those areas that are so hard to ship out there. And there's so yes, we are seeing more and more hydroponics. There are definitely it's not always easy to figure out because there's the lighting, there's the power energy needs. So I know there's also a lot of work going into trying to figure out how to make them more efficient, especially energy efficient.
Sure, especially in rural Alaska, where energy costs can be so high that it could be prohibitive. Robbie, did you want to add something there?
Yeah, I just wanted to loop back to Kodiak since we're heading there in a week. They have a really wonderful company called Brightbox that supplies greens to all different restaurants and households in Kodiak. And then the Aleutik Grown team that I mentioned earlier, they are doing a lot of work around setting up containerized hydroponic grows in various villages. And we at the Food Policy Council have a statewide working group around hydroponics and that Aleutik Grown group, and also Fairbanks Soil and Water are big contributors. So if folks want to learn more about hydroponics, we have a series of presentations on our website, and you can join our working group too.
All right. Well, thank you for that question, Marcia from Petersburg. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion about the spring growing season as Talk of Alaska continues statewide. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing food production in Alaska as spring approaches, and it's time to start thinking about crops and planting. On the line with me today are Robbie Mixon, who is the Executive Director of the Alaska Food Policy Council, and Rachel Lord, who is Advocacy and Policy Director for the Alaska Food Policy Council. Also, Amy Seitz is with us. Amy is the Policy Director for the Alaska Farm Bureau. Before the break, we were talking about the governor's support for some bills, some legislation, and his ideas about a Department of Agriculture. Let's talk about a couple of other bills, HB 60 and HB 12. Both relate to using more Alaska-grown food and fish for schools. HB 12 advocates for free breakfast and lunch for all public school kids in Alaska. Bringing more locally grown food into our schools would provide fresh options. How realistic would this be for both growing enough to supply schools and figuring out the distribution logistics? Who wants to tackle that?
Those are big questions, Lori. I mean, I guess I'll start. This is Rachel with AFPC. We strongly support House Bill 12, which is the free school meals for all. We also really support increasing the capacity of our agricultural producers to meet institutional market demands in schools and for other institutions, and appreciate the intention behind the procurement, which is so the 60 is the procurement preference law changes to increase the change the cost differential for the requirements for purchasing locally grown or Alaska-grown, Alaska-made products at state-funded institutions like our prisons and our schools. I guess, I think I'll punt to Amy to talk more about that. But I do want to say, in terms of the school meals, I think it's really important to note that the National School Lunch Program through, nationally at the federal level, was created as a matter of national security, and looking at the impact of childhood malnutrition on national readiness following World War II. We have one in six kids in the state of Alaska are food insecure, and we serve about 50,000 lunches a day in our schools. And so thinking about bridging that gap between what is provided through the school lunch program and what kids have to pay, what families have to pay for school meals, especially in a space where we're seeing our schools struggle to close the gap between what those meal reimbursements are from the USDA and the actual costs of not just purchasing food, but shipping the food, which in some of our rural communities can be a one-to-one or worse in terms of freight costs to the actual food cost. So
right.
I think that state investment in making sure that all of our kids have access to meals is critically important. And looking at it from a systems perspective, working with our agricultural producers, our seafood industry, and others to make sure that we can shorten that supply chain and get as much Alaska grown foods in our schools is, you know, it's an overall win. And it's also, it's a lift from where we currently are, and indeed, but it's a space where when we work together and really focus on those priorities, there's a lot of opportunity there. And I would argue more opportunity than there is challenge.
Well, and I want to follow up there, Rachel. I saw an example in the Food Policy Council notes on HB 60 and SB 67, procurement preferences for agriculture and fisheries products. The notes say the governor's task force noted that a concerted effort is needed to expand production and link it to purchasing needs, citing an example of if the Anchorage School District, for instance, if it needs 400 pounds of green beans for the school year, that needs to be facilitated. Would the Food Policy Council or the Farm Bureau assist in this type of coordination? Because the logistics seem pretty daunting.
It does seem like that'd be a cool space for the Department of Agriculture to work, I would say, but I'm going to let Amy speak to that.
I was just going to say that would be a great space for the Department of Agriculture, which it is something Farm Bureau has also been pushing for many years, trying to figure out how to get that procurement and our farmers together, which the percentage is just one piece of it. And that's what Senate Bill 67 and House Bill 60 do. They increase the product preference percentage from 7 to 10%. And then, you know, the optional, I think from 15 to 25%. So that increasing that allowed percentage is only one piece. The bigger piece has been getting our farmers through the system to get into the wholesale market. So like right now, US Foods is the company with the contract for procurement. And it's not easy for a farmer to go on and figure out how to become a vendor with US Foods. And that's so they can't go through the procurement process because they can't become a vendor with US Foods. And that's where having a Department of Ag, having a Commissioner of Ag who is working with the farmer, with the wholesaler, with the procurement office, we could really start making some connections. You know, farmers could figure out how much our schools or prisons need and start ramping up production while the, you know, commissioner or, you know, director right now is having the conversations with the wholesalers. So, you know, they're ready to take on these farmers, and then also getting the state procurement officers to think about looking for that Alaska grown food on their order form, you know, however that process works. So it's the percentage is one piece, getting that system changed to where we're getting more Alaska grown in the wholesale markets and getting more procurement officers used to looking for the Alaska grown. And whether, you know, so I know budgets are a concern, and a lot of people are worried that percentage increase is going to mean spending more money. But I think one important piece that doesn't get talked about a lot is if you're purchasing local, especially the fresh and raw, you know, the perishable items, cabbage, lettuce, you know, all those things. Even if the cost per unit is more, if it's fresher, there's not as much upfront waste, you know.
Yeah, excellent point. Yeah, which happens so often with, I know, rural shipments end
yeah,
up.
Well, yeah, especially the more rural you get, the more waste there is.
Of course.
So back in, I think, 2011, the Division of Ag did a little pilot project to kind of look at it. It wasn't an in-depth study or anything, but they worked with the Fairbanks School District, used fresh local cabbage to make coleslaw, and then they shipped in the pre-shredded bagged cabbage, you know, to make coleslaw. And it ended up, even though it took more hours for the staff to chop the local cabbage, when it was all said and done, they actually spent less money on the local cabbage than the imported cabbage.
And it was no doubt fresher and healthier for the students to eat it. We have an email from Chris and Homer that kind of tracks similarly. Chris writes, the show reminds me of a story I heard on APRN a number of years back. I can't remember who it was in Fairbanks that wrote the story. He grew up in Fairbanks eating locally. The wintertime, cabbage and carrots, Brussels sprouts. He went to the grocery store recently and bought $14 worth of groceries, apples, bananas, a loaf of bread, several other things. Came home, added up the miles of shipping to get those groceries to Fairbanks. He says, I believe it was somewhere in the vicinity of 28,000 miles of shipping for this $14 bag of groceries. And Chris says, I want to thank the local farmers for all their efforts. So a good reminder of the big distances that food is being shipped to get to Alaska. The governor introduced HB 11 and SB 108, a fin fish farm bill. The bill would promote non-salmon fish farming in landlocked waters, if I understand it correctly. But the bill has met a very cool reception from lawmakers. What do you all think about this? As fisheries decline, could this be a valid idea for raising more protein in rural places?
This is Rachel from AFPC, and most things I would say Alaska Food Policy Council stays fairly neutral on. We're a nonpartisan statewide organization. This is a issue that we have received a lot of questions about. We did write up a policy brief that is on our website that kind of outlines what the provisions are in the governor's bill, a little bit of history and background on the issue of finfish farming. That is it's a very rich history here in the state. And I think that it's a very large topic that there's a lot of concern around. There's certainly some excitement about it. It is something that we anticipate requiring a lot of concerted conversation. If that's the governor's interest is to really start that conversation, certainly it's started. But we see that there's a lot of concerns that are very valid from a lot of different sectors around the state, thinking about the opportunity of finfish farming, even if it is inland. And the governor's bill certainly put sideboards around the idea, having it not be offshore but inland and whatnot. And I think the legislature is asking hard questions and are expressing a lot of the concerns that we've also heard from Alaskans around the state that deserve a lot more conversation.
All right. I wanted to get to a question here from David in Fairbanks, who writes, if you all have any thoughts on how the change in growing season length affects things like giant veggies at the state fairs. Will there need to be a shift in fair season? David writes. Any thoughts there?
I think our long daylight hours aren't changing, so we're still going to get the big cabbages and pumpkins. There has, in recent years, seems to be a shift in fair seasons, and it seems like fairs are starting earlier. I think that shift had more to do with school years and stuff.
And not giant veggies.
Not giant veggies. But we still have the giant veggies. I could see the veggies getting even bigger with more efficient ways of producing. I think we'll still see plenty of giant veggies.
Which is always such a hoot. It's a lot of fun. So in general, and probably this is a question for you, Amy, are there Alaska or USDA programs and some type of financial assistance available today for someone interested in becoming a farmer or a rancher here?
Which there are. loan options out there. Farm Service Agency has multiple different loan opportunities. ARRC, Alaska Rural Rehabilitation Corporation, that was a set up to help farmers get loans. ARLF with the state, the Agriculture Revolving Loan Fund, which I understand they've, right now they have the max number of loans they can have, which I mean is a good indication we're having more farmers, I think. But yeah, finding access to capital has been one of the big struggles for farmers in Alaska. I think a lot of USDA programs don't fit our farmers. I mean, there are some. It just takes, it'd be helpful to have some more assistance to help our farmers work through what those are. But there are things, and we are getting more interest from more private lenders. We just don't have, like, your basic bank does in Alaska doesn't understand agriculture, so it's hard for a farmer to go there.
And then historically, we've had fairly good support through USDA, NRCS programs, EQIP programs, helping support. I mean, they're very, at least here on the Kenai Peninsula, quite famous, infamous for, the high tunnel programs that I think, I am one commercial farmer that started a commercial farm because of with the catalyst of having that high tunnel program over a dozen years ago now. So those sort of supports have historically been ones that folks have looked at, and other programs like, just a little bit dovetailing back to the school conversation, the local food purchasing agreement program through the USDA, which we have funding, my understanding is will continue through this year, but has currently been canceled, which was almost $1 million more into that program into the state of Alaska, where it's opportunities to help build and stabilize farmers as they're growing and expand those market opportunities in kind of that public-private partnership to then be providing those locally grown products to institutions like our food pantries and our food banks and also our schools. And I think a cool example of that is the Lake and Peninsula Borough School District has stopped participating in the National School Lunch Program. The school in New Halen in Iliamna, with approximately somewhere around 90 students, they worked with the Alaska Farmers Market Association using those USDA LFPA funds to purchase a cow from a rancher here in Homer, get it slaughtered and butchered and shipped to Iliamna, and those kids have that beef is in their freezer for the rest of this semester. So that sort of a program is helping not only our ranchers and our farmers have, market value purchases of their products to continue that growth. It's also helping, our schools and our institutions and our food pantries
Right. Get that fresh
ensure that our
food
kids
into
aren't hungry,
schools.
right?
Yeah, we are going to take
So,
another quick break here. Before we do, I just wanted to note that Burrell in Haynes writes, "The notion that local hands are needed to do the chopping of cabbage to make coleslaw is exactly why local is so important. Local food means local labor, a huge plus." We were just talking about some of those things, and we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion about growing in Alaska as Talk of Alaska continues. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Amy says, "How about quick success stories from each of the ladies that are aware of Alaska Ag, of the Alaska Ag arena?" And Amy says she's a longtime listener and a big fan of all of you. So please, if I was going to, it kind of segues well with a question that I wanted to get in front of you as well. Where do you see the greatest promise or innovation in what growers are doing here now? What's new in equipment or technology that's really helping?
That's a tough one, which I know. I mean, the high tunnels for certain areas of the state, as Rachel mentioned before, really, really expanded what we could grow and how long we could grow it for. But I would say also the work being done around lighting for growing, for indoor growing,
And the growing season is lengthening, but not uniformly across the state. Where are some of the biggest changes in terms of number of grow days? Where can people really grow Brussels sprouts? I know they take a long time.
And I mean, I know up in the interior, obviously, has the more heat days.
Sure.
But I think, like, I've seen people with pretty good success with Brussels sprouts all around the state. It just depends on how it seems the microclimates, and it's really hard to pinpoint the area with the most, because we have so many microclimates around the state also.
Yeah. And that is, you know, that's another question that I had was, most people working on food policy or assisting growers are in states that don't incorporate so many variations in their climate zones. But Alaska has a temperate rainforest in southeast, lots of heat in the interior, and then also the Arctic. Do you have different advisors for each of these very, very vastly different climate zones? Or how do you keep up with changes in such vastly different regions?
I think this is Robbie from the Food Policy Council. I think that's where our cooperative extension agents come in handy, and our place-based University of Alaska folks that are really on the ground and monitoring the changes and conditions, and can really help advise and come up with a custom plan for where you're located and what's going to grow well in the soil and the climate situations.
We also have some great soil and water conservation districts, and also tribal soil and water conservation districts. And I think that there's, you know, I mean, that's part of the work that we do with Farm Bureau and with so many others that we all are doing, is really working in partnership to learn not only from our researchers and extension agents, but also from one another. There's a tremendous amount of traditional knowledge that helps really ground that tracking of change and understanding kind of opportunities and challenges therein. I think that, you know, the question of successes that we've seen and opportunities that we're looking forward to, I wanted to highlight two, and one really is looking at, I think, organizations like Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium and THC, and spaces that we've really seen a lean into food sovereignty and local focus on communities and their traditional foods, and ways to kind of move that into health programs, health and wellness programs, when we tie in those sort of the health needs of our state as well. I think that's a really huge success. I think another thing that I'm really excited about is working with local farmers like Emily Garrity at Twitter Creek Farms here in Homer, has had a lot of challenges working with the state in leasing land, state land for agricultural purposes. And we're really excited it's been a really fun collaboration between us and Farm Bureau, Division of Ag, and we've been working with Senator Bjorkman's office. He's had great conversations with stakeholders and DNR, and looking, you know, to soon be introducing a bill to be looking to streamline that lease process for being able to use state lands for growing things like produce, which, you know, Twitter Creek is excited to expand their produce growing here on the Lower Peninsula. So things like that, I think, are just, we just have awesome collaborations, and this is an amazing state to be working in, with so many opportunities for continued collaboration on all these fronts.
One of the things that Alaska is challenged by is a lack of commercial meat processing facilities. Is that being addressed through legislation or community partnerships? What do you know about that front?
That's definitely an area that needs work.
Robbie and Rachel are pointing to Amy in this particular moment.
We know our focus.
Yeah, it's that, and this is another ongoing conversation in the farming community. Is there need? You know, we have two USDA slaughter facilities we actually have three, but two that are large enough to take in more farmers. You know, process more meat, and our state has been North Pole and Palmer, so you know it's a large distance to travel to get to those plants. And so obviously lots of farmers are wanting more facilities around the state, but it's always like with everything, it's a chicken and egg. We need more livestock production to make the units feasible. And we're not going to have significant expansion in the meat industry without more facilities. So it's like, there needs to be effort on building the markets for the meat industry, supporting the existing plants, and also figuring out easier ways to transport live animals. I mean, right now, each individual farmer has to transport their own live animal those long distances if they're not in Palmer or North Pole. So like figuring out all of those pieces to make the livestock industry and figure out how to get the infrastructure we need.
Go ahead, Robbie, please.
I'm sorry. It's so hard not seeing you. I did want to highlight in 2003 and 2004, the USDA had a pretty innovative grant program called the Indigenous Animals Harvesting and Meat Processing Grant. And we saw a handful of tribal entities like in St. Paul and Nome and in Old Harbor and Kodiak receive these grants to buy and modernize processing equipment that helps address community protein needs. So we've seen, for example, in Old Harbor, some bison processing programs, and also out in St. Paul, reindeer processing. So there's a handful of these micro meat processing projects that are popping up that are, you know, very meaningful, especially in our off-road areas.
Well, and
which we also have, there was the Forgivable Loan Program was set up in the state, and one of them would go towards funding to help with meat processing facilities. They were established in statute, but never funded. So
yet they haven't been funded yet. Growth mindset we have around our food systems.
Well, and we only have about 1 minute left, but is there any growing support for sort of revitalizing a dairy industry in Alaska? It just seems bonkers to me that it's somehow cheaper to ship milk from Washington or California than it is to have a dairy industry right here. Amy, in a few seconds, can you tell us if there's anything happening on that front?
Really quick, I hope we get more dairies, which we do have a pretty robust herd share clientele. You know, there's a pretty robust herd share, which is people buying into a herd to get access to raw milk and raw milk products. Mm. There's definitely a big challenge when you want to go to grade A with all the fees, you know, the testing, the certification, everything. Plus, we don't have a grade A facility, so each farm has to have their own. Like, our Alaska Range Dairy right now is the only grade A facility or dairy we have.
Well,
so everyone has to get their own equipment. So,
yeah, still a huge challenge, it sounds like. Thank you so much to Robbie Mixon and Rachel Lord, both with the Alaska Food Policy Council. And they are hosting a gathering in Kodiak on March 28th and 29th. And also thank you to Amy Seitz, who is the policy director for the Alaska Farm Bureau. Thanks to our engineer today, Chris Hyde, our producer, Madeline Rose, and on the phones, Wesley Early helped us out. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. I'm Lori Townsend.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.